Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Now we are going to talk about the state of testing and where we are in the United States with COVID-19. According to the latest numbers from Johns Hopkins, there are now over 1.3 million positive COVID cases in the U.S. 80,897 people have tragically died. At a White House press conference yesterday, on the day the U.S. crossed a milestone, 80,000 deaths, Donald Trump said, quote, "We have met the moment and we have prevailed," end quote. He spent most of the conference saying that the United States is testing more than any other country per capita, but that is not true. The United States is still behind countries like Canada, Germany, and Italy. There are still no clear plans in place on testing, contact tracing, ensuring healthcare workers and frontline workers have PPE, or how to deal with another wave after reopening. Joining us to talk about all of this is Dr. Dina Grayson, a medical doctor and researcher who spent years developing a medical treatment for Ebola. Hi, Dr. Grayson. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you, Dr. Grayson. Story after story is reporting that what Donald Trump said yesterday about testing just is not true. The U.S. has tested less than 2.4% of the population. So let's just go over the numbers. Since the beginning of May, the Washington Post reports that the U.S. has tested about 250,000 people on most days. But on Monday, the U.S. reached a record of nearly 395,000 reported tests. What are your thoughts on this, Dr. Grayson? Public health experts say these numbers are still far too low.
Oh, the amount of testing that's being done is woefully inadequate. Look, the Trump administration, including all the way up to Mr. Trump himself and Mr. Pence, have repeatedly promised millions of tests. Remember Mr. Pence saying this? We're going to have millions of tests. We still don't. I mean, you know, so it's a lie. And the other thing that's very misleading is that now the Trump administration likes to compare our testing to South Korea's on a per capita basis. But the fallacy in that is that South Korea tested very, very early. So both of our countries had our first case on the exact same day. South Korea had their first test approved by their version of the FDA 1 week later. You know, we dithered for almost 2 months before we had a test. And so South Korea implemented very aggressive testing and tracing early on in its outbreak. So now they don't have to test as much because they don't have 1.3 million confirmed cases. And, you know, one thing that your listeners should understand is the number of actual cases is probably about 10 times higher than the confirmed cases. And the number of deaths is at least 50% higher based upon a Yale University study. So, you know, it's woefully inadequate, and unfortunately we let the snowball head downhill. Now it's an avalanche, and we're trying to catch up. And so, you know, having 300,000 tests per day, that doesn't even cover the number of people who are sick and suspected of having COVID-19, let alone start to cover the asymptomatic surveillance that you need to do, because we know that up to 60% of infections with this virus can be asymptomatic. And these asymptomatic people can be super spreaders and be spreading this virus all over the place without even knowing it.
Dr. Grayson, to stick with South Korea for a minute, as you said, South Korea and the United States had their first confirmed cases on January 21st. On March 3rd, the United States had 9 deaths. South Korea had 28. That was on March 3rd. Here we are 2 months later in a few days. I mean, the numbers are shocking. South Korea has had 256 deaths. The United States, as I said, the latest numbers, 80,897 deaths.
Well, and the numbers, the real numbers are even more shocking, Rose. As I mentioned, you know, the real death toll is at least 50% higher. Okay, so, you know, when you're in a rapidly moving pandemic, you can't just look at the number of confirmed cases because, for example, in New York, even, you know, with the best of intent, let's assume that the administration really rolled out testing. You have, you know, when you overwhelm the system, people die at home and they never got a test in New York. So you have to do something looking at what's called the excess death toll. And how that works is you look over the last five years in a given area, like let's say New York City or San Francisco, and you look at the average number of deaths over the past 5 years and compare it to today, okay? And in New York City, at the height of the outbreak there, the excess death toll was four times higher than average, fourfold. And nationally, a Yale University study estimates that the actual death toll is probably about 50% higher. So that means we're above 120,000 deaths and counting and counting and counting. And remember, we're averaging 25,000 confirmed cases every day. And that translates likely into probably about a tenfold higher actual number based upon antibody tests. So that's about 250,000 cases a day. And we're averaging close to 2,000 confirmed deaths each and every day. Okay, so, you know, this idea that we're going to somehow magically, the virus is going to go away over the summer as we're reopening, and we know that that's going to lead to more infections, more hospitalizations, and more deaths. I mean, this is just a fallacy. And Mr. Trump and the Republicans seem to think that this virus is going to magically disappear, that cases are just going to magically decrease because it's summer. And, you know, we may see some improvement, as I've been predicting for months, over the summer, which is a little bit of a respite in the summer months, that because it doesn't favor the spread, but it doesn't mean that people aren't getting infected, because we're seeing this each and every day. And so Dr. one last thing, Rose, to think about is we head into the fall, okay? We started our first outbreak here, the first wave of infections, with zero cases, right? We had zero cases heading into flu season, and we ended up where we are today, averaging 25,000 confirmed cases a day and 2,000 deaths per day. We're going to head into next flu season with a baseline that's much, much higher, and we're going to have the full flu season. That's why people like me have been warning about this big, more deadly second wave of infections.
Right. And senators heard from health officials this morning. Dr. Fauci said that the country faces, quote, needless suffering and death if the nation reopens too early. Dr. Grayson, how should this be dealt with? Because so many people are suffering economically. People need to feed their families. And this is directly connected to just how the government rolled out unemployment assistance. A lot of people are having problems getting it. In many cases, it's definitely just not enough, you know, especially in places like the Bay Area where it's expensive to live. So we know that people are suffering and they need to feed their families. That is a fact. How do you think the government should deal with this? Because if you just look, for example, at Google News, Pennsylvania, new cases increased by 837 with 75 new deaths. Coronavirus deaths in Massachusetts increased by 139, more than 1,000 cases. Delaware sees a jump of 118 cases. You know, on and on and on.
The nation's heartland is really getting hammered. You look at areas in Nebraska, they're seeing a 1,000-fold increase in cases, you know. So you know, this is the problem that we're in, Rose, is the choices are awful and really, really awful. So, you know, let's say we continue to lock down. Well, you're right. People are hurting, especially people who can't work from home. And people need to eat. They need to put food on the table. They need to pay their rent. They need to make their car payments. You know, they need to have access to health care. This is a huge problem. But the problem is there seems to be this binary sort of algorithm that's put out there that, okay, we either stay closed, we have economic despair, or we reopen and the economy recovers, but a lot of people die. Well, that's actually not true. I mean, people started locking down in their homes before the government said lockdown. And remember, who spends money? It's not young millennials. What drives our economy are older folks, okay? They're afraid. People don't want to die. Period. So this notion that suddenly we're just going to reopen the economy, it's not going to be reopening as, you know, we are in a new normal until we have a vaccine and people are vaccinated. We are unfortunately in this horrible situation where, you know, we reopen. There is, most economists will say the economy is really not going to recover. It's just not. Those jobs are not magically going to come back. And we know that many more people will die. We know that. If we reopen too quickly, too broadly. So the choices are terrible. And so, we obviously need to help out those who are suffering. And, you know, with a virus like this, it exposes every weakness in the system, every crack, every flaw, you know, the lack of health care, universal health care in this country is a huge problem. I mean, we've got people working and risking their lives in meatpacking plants, and they're now being forced to go to work, and they don't have health insurance. And then they have to pay for their own coronavirus tests, and then if they get sick, they don't get any pay. I mean, this is ridiculous. So, we need a longer-term solution. And frankly, we also need, a federal works program. If we have people that we identify who have had the virus, cleared the virus, have antibodies to the virus, and are likely immune, let's put them to work. We need an army of contact tracers. You don't need to have a college degree. You don't need to be a doctor to do that. You can be trained how to do that. Let's put people to work to deliver food and medicine to the vulnerable, right? If you've got somebody who's immune to the virus, they can't get it, they can't spread it, let's have them help folks that can't leave their home so we can at least partially reopen the economy. But the reality here, Rose, is we have an utter void of leadership at the top. Okay, Trump wants, his whole thing is to treat this not as a PH issue, public health issue, crisis, but rather as a PR crisis. And all he cares about is himself. So he's worried about getting reelected, and pandemics and a bunch of people dying are bad for his reelection chances. That's why he keeps saying, I don't like the numbers. You don't really need to get a test, which is just lunacy, because he is only worried about himself, and we have no leadership coming from the top.
Dr. Grayson, we have just a couple minutes left. We've asked you this so many times. We've been having you on for months. What should the plan at this point be at a time when those of us who can stay inside are staying inside? It's been a few months now. And then you see like a restaurant, for example, in Castle Rock, Colorado for Mother's Day. It was utterly packed, no masks, no social distancing, just another day for Sunday brunch.
Yeah, well, that's, and then you see these COVID idiots that are out there protesting with no masks, right? I mean, we know how that story is going to end. It's not going to end well, and people are going to die because of this. So what needs to happen is, listen to the scientists, listen to the doctors. There are very clear guidelines on what needs to be done to reopen safely. First of all, you've got to get the case count down. That's a big problem. We haven't really done that. Now, New York, in areas we have, and I think that, we have to realize that one size does not fit all, right? So that, what goes in New York City does not even work in upstate New York. As Governor Cuomo said, just like in California, there's a lot of regional differences between more urban areas and more rural areas with respect to where there are true hotspots of this virus. So what needs to happen is a very coordinated, data-driven, science-driven response, right? So you don't reopen until you have new case counts much, much lower. And then when you reopen, you got to have lots and lots of testing. Now, we can't test every single person every single day, but there are some innovative approaches, like, for example, pooling samples of everybody who goes to work at a nursing home where there's high-risk patients. The data now, you could pool samples from 10 to 20 people and run one test. So you can save the number of tests you need to run. If it's negative, then everyone's negative. If it's positive, then you just retest everyone in that pooled sample. So we need not 300,000 tests a day, not 3 million tests a day, but tens of millions of tests a day. We have a very large country, and we really need a massive, huge testing and tracing program, because otherwise you're only left with these very blunt measures, which are called mitigation measures, meaning lockdowns. So if you want to contain the virus, you've got to do it smartly. You've got to do it in a fact-driven way with testing, 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 and tracing, tracing, tracing. And we need quarantine spaces like empty motels and hotels to put people so we don't put them back home where they're going to infect their family members. Okay, that's just lunacy. So, we have no leadership coming from the top.
Well, Dr. Grayson, we need to have you on for another hour to really go over what a plan needs to look like. So, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rose. Be safe.
You too. Dr. Dina Grayson is a medical doctor and researcher who spent years developing a medical treatment for Ebola. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.